Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I am a compulsive eater. I say compulsive eater rather than compulsive overeater because I am both a compulsive over and under eater. So food and what it was like. Food was there from my earliest memory. I really don't remember not having an addictive relationship with food. Now, I was a normal-sized baby, but by the time I was five, family pictures show that it had started to catch up with me at the scale. I was a chubby child and a fat teen and a downright obese young adult. I learned compulsive eating from my family, and so we ate on every possible occasion. And, you know, I can remember certain events primarily by what did we eat? Where did we go? Things like that, which is really sad in some ways because I lost so much by focusing overly on the food. I was a big emotional eater. I had a food for every possible emotion, happy, sad, mad, scared. It didn't matter. I had a food for that. What made that particularly problematic is that, you know, it talks about how addicts are people of extremes. Yep, that's me. So on a scale, if emotions are on a scale of 1 to 10, my emotions started at 12 and went up from there. And, you know, so I got the message from other people because of that and other reasons that there was something really wrong with me. And how I describe it is that I was just too. I was too emotional. I was too needy. I was too loud. I was too fat. I was too talkative. I was too bookish. I was just too. And I was out of step with everybody else. I didn't get that how to human or how to be a superhuman, because that's what I expected since I'm two. You know, I never got that book. Really ticked me off. And so I did all these different things to try to deal with the fact that I didn't fit in the world. It was like having a rock in your shoe. You're always just a little uncomfortable. I was just always a little off. And one of the big things that I did was I became an approval addict, and I did a lot of extra stuff, you know, because of course more is good, right? That's what we compulsive people think. But the problem is that they never really lasted. I read in a book once, and it stayed with me, somebody who said, it takes all my accomplishments to bring me up to zero. That really typifies what I believed about myself. So accomplishments didn't cut it. And so then I tried situational cures and to see if that would fix it. So I grew up in this little bitty town in the suburbs of Chicago, but they had a consolidated high school that served five little bitty towns. And I thought, wow, when I go to the big school where not everybody remembers the dumb thing I did in kindergarten, that will fix it. And then when it was time for me to go to college, I deliberately chose a college where nobody from my hometown was going. And I thought that will fix it. I started student teaching. I'm going to get ready for my new career. That's going to fix it. I got married a month after graduation. That's going to fix it. I'll quit my job and have a baby. That's going to fix it. And none of those things fixed it because I took me with me every time. And the problem was not just that I was fat. It was not just that I was too. The problem was that I was emotionally and spiritually sick. Of course, diets were one of the biggest things where I tried to fix it. But the problem with diets is that you go on them and you go off them. So, and I started the round of diets when I was 10, my mom took me to the doctor who put me on a diet. But you know the drill with diets. You lose 10 pounds and you gain 20. You lose 25 pounds and you gain 40. You lose 40 pounds and you gain 60. Or at least that's how it worked for me. I joke that my last diet lasted 15 minutes. It actually, I probably made it to lunchtime, but I increasingly became unable to diet. Despite I tried all the commercial weight loss groups that were available in the community I lived in. Thankfully, I never tried diet pills. I know I would have taken them, and had they been on offer, but my doctor was too ethical to give them to a kid. So for that, I am thankful. So time went on, and I went up and down the scale, yo-yoed, all this stuff. And by the time I was in my late 20s, outwardly I had all my needs and some of my wants, and I had outwardly a good life. I was married. I had two cute little kids. We had a cute little house. We had some friends, and blah 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 blah. The only problem was I was miserable. I hated myself. I was absolutely consumed with self-hate. Sometimes I just wanted to die. So what happened? A friend of my church told me about OA, and it was really important to me. Doing ad religion addictively was one of the things that I tried to make myself okay. That didn't work either, but it was really important to me that this person was from my church, because that gave it the good housekeeping seal of approval. And I went to my first meeting on a cold night in February of 1986, and I really think about it kind of like when Dorothy gets to Oz and she walks out and there's light and there's color and there's beauty for the first time. That's how I felt, because oh my gosh, there were people there that spoke my language. There were people that thought the things I thought, that had felt the things that I'd felt, that had done the things I did. I was not alone in the universe anymore. I was not just this freak. I was a compulsive eater. There was a name for what was wrong with me. Now, I was not at my top weight when I came into OA, because I had been on one of the commercial weight loss groups and I'd lost a bunch of weight. And then I had a baby, and that kind of messed that up. And I was busily binging, gaining it back. I gained 11 pounds in 1 week, but I hadn't managed to gain it all back yet. So I got abstinent pretty quickly, and because I was young and I wasn't at my top weight, it didn't take me that long to get to a normal body size. Although it took another 20 years for me to get to realize that I was at a normal body size. And losing the fat between the ears and the fat in my heart, that took a lot longer. I had to learn a lot of lessons in the program. One of the things I had to do was learn to get it relate to my higher power in a different way, because what I would tell you is that I believe that there was a God who was full of grace. What my life would tell you is that I believe that God was Lucy and I was Charlie Brown, and God was going to yank that football away, and I was going to fall on my ass. That's what I believe. I had to learn that I couldn't achieve my way into sanity. I had to learn to be willing. There were all these things that I wasn't willing to do early on. I wasn't willing to leave the little bitty town I lived in. I wasn't willing to go to a meeting. I wasn't willing to call my sponsor very much because I might bother her. I wasn't willing to give up my binge foods. There were a lot of things I wasn't willing to do early on. And one of the things that I wasn't willing to do early on was really be honest with what I was doing. And so that led to my first relapse, because my first absence was just 301, but I wasn't really restricting what foods I ate. But 301 was enough to give me a measure of sanity, and was willing and got a lot of the fat off my body. But when I got sloppy and got dishonest, I went into what I refer to as my technical virgin relapse. Those of you who are a certain age probably remember that the technical virgin, the girl that goes does everything but. Well, I did everything but binge. And then I noticed that all the insanity, all the stinking thinking was starting to come back. And I got honest with my higher power, and I was graced with the gift of abstinence once again. I then stopped sharing honestly at meetings for a while and just, tried to be the hero. And because I'm articulate and I was a normal body size, people bought into that. And I learned that I'm as sick as I'm secretive, and had, and I had to experience a brief relapse for that. And I finally had one last relapse, thankfully, and I hope, I pray God I don't have another, but where I was doing a bunch of family origin work, and I came to some realizations about some things in my family that I thought were too big and too bad and too hard, and I just would not face them. And instead, I started restricting, and I thought, if I don't eat, I don't have to feel. What I learned from that was two things. First of all, I am just as nuts when I'm crazy, nuts, nuts when I'm restricting as I am when I'm overeating. And two, I learned what I refer to as my dirty diaper analogy. My first post-college job was working at a daycare center. And I learned there that the only thing worse than changing dirty pants on a baby is not changing dirty pants on a baby. And that's kind of like facing your stuff. Because if you don't face it or you don't change the dirty pants, the longer it takes, the worse it smells, and the more pain there is for everybody involved. It took me 15 months to get out of that relapse, and I finally was struck abstinent at a church potluck. I just couldn't. I was there with my mother-in-law, and I just could not do one more game and one more lie and one more whatever. And I ate an abstinent meal that night. And then the next morning, I got up and ate an abstinent breakfast and an abstinent lunch. And that evening, I was getting ready to go to a meeting, and I realized that I was abstinent again. That was August 2nd of 1995. Since that day, 28 years ago, it has not been necessary for me to over or under eat compulsively. So, what's it like now? I really have a life that is beyond my wildest dreams. How I get and keep that is that I've worked all 12 steps several times, and I live in 10, 11, and 12. I have a sponsor, and I am a sponsor. I have a home group where I am honest and open and accountable. And I've let go of my never list. I never was going to weigh and measure. I never was going to give up sugar. I never was going to travel to meetings, blah, 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 blah. All those things. I was never going to write down my food. I do all those things now because it saves my ass. And I learned to live life on life's terms. And that holds true whether I'm going through big times. I had a teenager that ran away to Canada because of somebody to see somebody she met on the internet. My husband and my daughter both went through cancer. I was disowned by my family of origin. I went through unemployment. It was a total upheaval. I left my whole life behind to move from central Illinois to Pennsylvania. And it took me 18 months to find another job. None of the all of those things were big challenges. It also is holds true in good times when I went back to school, when I got promoted, when we experienced financial success, when I realized that I had good relationships with all of my adult children, when I got to do international travel. My background is from a trip to Italy I took this fall, and I didn't have to eat over any of those bad things or any of those good things. I like walking around in a normal sized body, but more importantly, I like walking around feeling comfortable in my own skin. And I think that is the greatest gift of all. When I left my life behind and had to build a whole new life in Pennsylvania, I realized that I didn't need to do achievements to be okay in the universe, that just me and my higher power were enough. I don't have to be an approval addict anymore. And 90% of the time, I really am comfortable being just Pat, because God plus just Pat is enough. And I'd like to close with a passage from the big book that to me just really exemplifies my experience in the almost 38 years I've been in the rooms, because it'll be
Excuse
38
me,
years
Pat, you
in
have
the.
a little bit over 5 minutes.
All right. So the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had, this is from The Keys to the Kingdom, by the way. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But I have also known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone, and it need never return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. And with that, I will pass. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own, and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you've asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click on the raise your hand icon. Okay, so I see Bob, and then I see Ellie, and then I see Bianca. So Bob, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Pam, for an incredible, Pat, excuse me, for an incredible share. And how important is service to you in this program?
Service saves my ass. That's the bottom line. Service gets me out of myself, because I can be just as self-centered as any other addict on the planet. But when I am doing service, I forget me and to a large extent, and I'm focused on the other person or on the good of the group. The other thing about service is that if I'm sharing, or if I'm talking with another compulsive eater, then I'm of course going to my higher power for what do I say, what do I do, and it's impossible for me to give to somebody else or to share to someone else without being touched by my higher power, as God, as I understand God, passes through me to the other person. I cannot be unchanged by that experience. And it is amazing to me how many times I've heard exactly what I need to hear when somebody asks me the question and I answer it. Okay, Ellie.
Thank you, Pat. I enjoyed hearing your share, and hopefully I didn't miss. What is your current abstinence? Are there foods that you don't eat that you might consider alcoholic foods? And the last part of the question would be, what is it do you think that would, quote, guarantee, close quote, against a future relapse? Thank you.
Okay, so abstinence for me is neither over nor under eating compulsively. Typically, that's one meal a day, 3 meals a day, and one snack. And there are I have been abstinent for 28 years, and I do avoid certain foods, primarily things that are highly sugary, and anything that, as a friend of mine put it, sings and dances to me on a plate. Fake sugars are also a big problem. For example, I remember having a problem with this instant kind of instant coffee that had artificial sweetener and non-fat creamer in it, and I thought it was fine because it was sugar free. until I realized that a can that contained allegedly, reportedly 20 servings, I was going through three cans a week. You think there's a problem here? And I learned that that was not my food anymore. Guarantees, in one sense, there are no guarantees. I am dependent on the gift of my higher power. But my higher power, what my higher power does doesn't change, but my higher power's nature does not change. And my higher power only wants good things for me. And that includes primarily, first and foremost, the gift of abstinence. What makes me sure that I can continue to have this gift is maintaining in conscious contact with my God. I need to have that on a daily basis. I need to do my daily disciplines on a daily basis. I need to make sure that I am remembering where I've been so that I never have to go back there again.
Thank you.
Bianca.
Hi, thank you so much for your share. This question probably has a very short answer. You had just mentioned, excuse me, at some point in your share, 301, and I was wondering what you were referring to.
301 is a common way that many people practice abstinence. And what that means is three meals a day, nothing in between, one day at a time. Okay, Deanna.
There you go. Deanna, compulsive overeater, thank you so much for your share. I know you mentioned about your higher power being like a Charlie Brown in the football higher power. Can you talk about how your higher power's changed and has it come closer or further in alignment with your religious beliefs?
Okay, my higher power definitely is way, way closer to what I was taught who God was, that God was all powerful. God was all loving, but God loves me enough to want my best. And sometimes that means doing hard things, but he's always going to give me the power to do his will. A power for willingness is always going to be answered eventually. sometimes it takes a while, but God is definitely forgiving of my human frailty. Because I mess up on a daily basis, not with the food, thankfully, but you know, I'm still human and I still make mistakes. And God is big enough to fill the gap between what I can do with my human limitations and what God can do with his incredible power. And I'm not always going to understand what God does, because if God fits in my understanding, then he wouldn't be higher. He wouldn't be greater. He wouldn't be. You know, he would be as limited as I am. But I believe definitely in a God of grace that wants the best for me. And I believe God wants that for every person. I don't think I'm special. Sometimes I think I'm amazed at how much I've been given. And I see people struggling and I don't understand, because I'm not special. I just picked up the simple kit of tools that was laid at my feet. That's all I did. And yet I have been given incredible riches by that God. Megan.
Thanks, Pat.
Can't hear you.
Oh, thank you, Pat. Where did you get your God? In other words, did you get it just by working the steps, or did you have to turn to outside resources?
I'm one of these people that came in with a religious practice, and I had a spiritual awakening in college, and practiced a religion before I came into OA, but then I acquired my current relationship with God primarily through working the steps and through seeing God in other people, seeing what God did in my life, the incredible gifts that God gave me, and seeing God move in other people's lives and transform other people's lives. That remind me, you know, if so-and-so can do it, then so can I. If so-and-so can get through this situation and not use food addictively, then God can give me that ability. You know, if I hear the same message three different times, you think God might be talking to me? You know, so being willing to listen, all of those things have enabled me to become closer to the God of my understanding and closer to what my religious tradition has always taught. Deb.
Thanks so much, Pat. Really got a lot out of it from your share. I'm Deb, food addict. Can you talk about how relationships have changed for you through recovery, you know, work, children, spouse, all that kind of stuff?
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. That's a big one because they've been incredibly changed. When I came into program, I had a preschooler and a baby who I referred to as the Velcro child. Because she was Velcro to me. I had a third child while I was in the rooms. It is true that I called my sponsor from the labor room and told her that I wasn't coming to the meeting because I was about to give birth. And I now have good open relationships with all three of my now adult children. I got married with a hardly cold diploma at age 20. I was totally a totally sick person. And I used a lot of manipulation and a lot of guilt and a lot of my extreme emotions to try to control my spouse. And I thought he was incredibly controlling. None of those things are true now. Now, you know, 44 years later, I tease him and tell him he's been serially monogamous with the same woman. Because I am not the woman he married. We just had a situation where there's something that he wants to do and there's something I want to do and they're in conflict. Both of those things cannot happen. And always before, I would get my knickers in a twist and get all upset and be insistent on my self-will. And right now I'm in this in-between space where I absolutely believe God is going to make his will clear. And that I will be okay with whether I get my way or whether my husband gets his way, that it will be okay and I will be okay no matter what those things happen. Work. First of all, I had to learn that I was okay to work, that I was good enough to work in my field. And then I learned that I could do difficult things. I was promoted when my predecessor was killed in an accident and I became the department head, and I never knew how to be a leader before, and I learned how to do that. And I learned that I didn't want to do that anymore, and I stepped away from that role. I'm still very much a work in progress, but I am working on not working addictively, because work it can be a really good way to avoid being with others. People rely on me. People trust me. My students and my tutors tell me how patient I am. And I laugh and I say, the patience that I've been given, I choose to spend with you because you deserve it. And that's how I see it. You know, but, you know, I've gotten nothing from but love and acceptance since I moved here. And I think it's because of the person I've been able to become, because that person is willing to be present in relationships, and none of those things were true when I first walked in the doors. Anyone else? Cheryl.
Pat, thank you so much for your wonderful, wonderful share. I have 1,000 questions. I'm going to try to keep it to one. You touched upon it briefly just a couple questions ago about, oh, if somebody else can get through that situation without compulsively overeating, I can. Do you have an example in your life where, I mean, the rain came down and you had to like pour extra program into it? If you have an example, would you be willing to share it both the situation and how you pulled yourself out of it, because theoretically the third step is great, but practically speaking, getting up every day and really turning your will and your life over to God is something else.
Okay, I'll give you a really good example of where, as one of my friends puts it, you know, where God hands you the big lump and you have to digest it. That's in the AA 12 and 12. There was a point in my life where this was after I had become the department head, but it was still new, and it was, and I was still very much learning, feeling my way. I had never been trained to be a manager, and I was making a lot of rookie mistakes. But I desperately wanted to succeed because I believed in the mission of what I did. And I was confronted and told that my employees were, that my staff was really unhappy, that I had done this wrong and that I had done that wrong. And a lot of the accusations were things that were not true. But I was threatened with being put on a performance plan. The same day that happened, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And my husband, and he had a lot of resentment for my job because as I was learning, I was working crazy hours trying to desperately learn how to do my job. They had not yet hired my successor in my old job, so I was doing both of them. So this was the situation. And I really needed to lean on my higher power. I leaned on my sponsor really hard. I leaned on meetings really hard. I leaned on writing really hard because this was definitely something that was hugely bigger than me. I did not eat compulsively during that time. I'm not saying it was pretty. Did I cry a lot? Did I yell and scream? I did all of those things, but I did not eat. My husband is fine now, by the way. And I got through the bad job thing, and we had an external evaluation, and the external evaluator told the college president what a wonderful job I was doing as a leader. So you have to tell the happy ending. But Carol.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for your share. The thing that really, really struck me, and I'm paraphrasing, is this idea of I'm, you know, several accomplishments away from getting to zero. And I've never heard someone put it like that before. And I'm wondering if you could just, I totally relate. I wonder if you could expand on that and whether you've had recovery around it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so the being several accomplishments away from zero was, you know, I was, you know, one of the things with pride, the defect of pride and self-centeredness, is we're either the best of the best or we're the worst of the worst. I really bought into the idea that I was the worst of the worst. Some of that had to do with things that happened to me in my childhood, because there was abuse in my home, and that marked me as being inherently bad and defective in my mind because it was my fault. And I had to do a lot of emotional and spiritual work, including some outside of program work, to heal from that. But I also had to see that I was valued because, not because of I did this or I won that or this other thing, but because I was Pat. And really, that came to fruition when I moved from Illinois to Pennsylvania, because I didn't have the fancy job and the title anymore. All of my accomplishments, all the things that all the kudos I had accrued and whatever, those all were in the past, and they were they were 800 miles away. Nobody knew me. Nobody remembered me to being anybody other than the person they saw sitting in that chair. And yet I was greeted with nothing but love and acceptance. People wanted to get to know me. People wanted to spend time with me. People wanted to help me find a job and get acclimated, learn, find a good hairdresser, you know, whatever. And I realized that I was absolutely okay being Pat. I didn't need to have the accomplishments. They're nice. I still enjoy kudos. I want to do well because the things that I'm doing things because I believe that God told their God's will for me to carry out. And I want good well, I want to honor that, but it doesn't make me a better person. It just makes me another bozo on the bus. Anyone else?
We have a little less than 2 minutes left for question and answer.
So this is kind of last call. I didn't share my numbers, and I probably should have. I am maintaining a 100-pound weight loss, and I'm up 15 pounds from when I was restricting. Jen.
Yes. Thank you for your share. Do you ever find yourself wanting to restrict or crave extra food? And if so, what do you do about it?
Every once in a while that happens. Usually, then I'm going to ask myself, okay, what's going on? Am I hungry, angry, lonely, tired? Am I stressed out about something? Things like that. I'm going to go to my higher power. I'm going to go to my program. I'm going to remind myself, A, that I'm thin enough, and B, that that's not my food. That's somebody else's food. And it might look good to me, but most of the time those things, I used to have a candy jar on my desk and I had a jar of paper clips next to me, and I would no more have eaten one than I would have eaten the other. And most of the time I live like that. But it's going to my higher power and it's looking at what is eating me that gets me through those times.
It's time for question and answer.
Okay, so that's the end of the Q&A time. So now it's time for the secretary's announcements.